Welcome, everyone. Called the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Today, we are going to start off with a work session that should go pretty quickly. And then when Senator Bates arrives, we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 307. So we'll just work through the other matters on our agenda until he arrives. So I will open a work session on Senate Bill 250 today.
Chair Redding, members of the committee, in front of you, you have Senate Bill 250-A14 amendment, which combines -A9, A11, and A12 that the committee adopted. And you have the fiscal, and you have the revenue.
Excuse me, we adopted an A12 as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. This bill has been heard, it's been worked, it's been amended. We have a fiscal on a -A14 amendment, which is nothing more than the combined amendments that are already in the bill. So I have been advised that this is good to go in terms of our committee rules. So, Senator Morse, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, clarification first. You're saying it's not necessary to adopt the -14?
Correct. The -14 is the combination of the other three amendments.
They're informational only. Okay, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 250 as amended for the due pass recommendation to the committee, Joint Committee on Ways and Means, by prior reference.
Thank you. Senator Morse has moved Senate Bill 250 with a due pass recommendation and a recommendation of subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be on the record that I will be voting no because all my school districts, my ESD people, all personnel that I represent have told me that they're against the bill. So.
Okay. Senator Happ.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a reform that will redirect tens of millions of dollars from administratively bloated ESDs in this state that have grown too big and redirect that money back into K-12 classrooms. If there is one thing that constituents in my district have asked me to do, it is that, to take more money from administration and put it into classrooms. This is, I think, an example of that. And I just many thanks to the people who have been working for, I think, 2 months on this now, in the Education Committee and then on this committee. And I think it's very appropriate for it to go to Ways and Means, where people down there can sort out the fairly large sea change in our educational system. And look forward to getting this on the floor.
Thank you. And I've been assured that the Ways and Means Committee will be very attentive to this issue.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morris.
If I might be allowed to make a comment, it's kind of from the perspective of agreeing with Senator Telfer and with Senator Happ.
Ooh, a true politician.
And I do have reservations about the abruptness and the cliff and the impacts it causes within our districts. And the services, particularly for the small school, the impact on small schools. So I'm moving this, supporting the concept, but expressing that concern.
Thank you. Further discussion? There is none. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Mark Hess?
Yes.
Senator Chris Telfer?
No.
Vice Chair Frank Morris?
Yes.
Chair Jenny Burdick?
Yes. The bill is passed. Okay. Now, what do we have in here? We will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 751. And I'll just have to tell the folks who are here on this bill that when Senator Bates comes in, we will recess and then go back to it. So, welcome, Christine.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. Senate Bill 751 would define information services to mean offering capability to generate, acquire, store, transform, process, retrieve, utilize, or make available information through communications, including electronic publishing. And there's currently a list of the types of businesses that are centrally assessed by the Department of Revenue. This would exempt a person from assessment of centrally assessed property to the extent that the person provides information services to consumers by means of agreements for telephone communication, data transmission, or broadband access services.
Okay, we're going to start out with John Phillips. Are you in here somewhere? There you are. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. I had a chance to take a look at this legislation, and currently the law requires, as Christine said, that companies provide communication services that they are centrally assessed, which means they're assessed by the Department of Revenue rather than the counties.
Thank you.
The types of properties that are typically centrally assessed are those that sort of have a network or an integrated operating unit that spans county lines, state lines, national lines, sometimes they're international companies, and any particular piece of pipe or wire or railroad tie or whatever is has a value, but it has a greater value when it's linked to an integrated operating system. So it makes it difficult for a single county to appraise locally 10 miles of railroad track or a natural gas pipeline running through their county. And so these types of companies, since early in last century, have been appraised by the Department of Revenue under what's called central assessment, where we look at the unit of property as a whole, and then we apportion it to the states, and then to the counties, and then to the code areas where that property exists, if it can be identified as individual property. So what this bill does is it carves out from the central assessment, and more specifically from the centrally assessed properties that are communications companies, it carves out an exception to make certain properties with certain identified services to be locally assessed. So with that context, we have a few concerns because in the first place, we think the language is ambiguous as it's written. I'd have to ask myself whether Quest or Comcast or AT&T or Verizon offer the capability to acquire information through communication, because the bill would have that locally assessed. And we think they do offer the ability to acquire information through communication. Another question does the internet-related features and services fall under the definition of information services? There are a lot of types of services that are offered besides the ones that are listed. What about a portal? Is a portal included in the definition of information services? What about a platform, a domain? What about the transmission, an ISP? There's a lot of different terms that are not included, and we are not sure. Somebody will have to determine if the bill passes whether or not that service is part of information services or not. Next, is it reasonable that the taxpayer company would construe this language from their perspective and see a gestalt image? And I presented an image on the page there to show you that it's equally possible to see two views, at least, in this picture. You'd be right if you saw a young woman in the picture. It's a picture most people are familiar with. Or you'd be right if you saw an elderly woman in the picture. And so if Yahoo, for example, sees an image that this bill presents and thinks that it works for them, it might be equally plausible that another company that's a communications company that maybe isn't contemplated might also see themselves in this bill too. So we are concerned about having to deal with varying perspectives of the same language. There is another view that can also be read into this bill, and is that all companies, except for companies such as Yahoo or Google or Facebook, would be locally assessed, but for those companies. So that seems to present the opposite of what I've understood that the proponents are seeking, because those companies do offer the ability to acquire information and make that available through communication, but often not through agreements. And if you look at page 3, that requires that one of the conditions are that there be agreements. And I think, if I understand that correctly, I can go to my computer and type in Yahoo or Google, and it comes up without me signing an agreement. So I do have access to those services without signing an agreement. And so there's language things that I think need to be worked on here. And the department, just to make it clear, it's certainly your policy to decide whether you want a company or a type of service locally or centrally assessed, and we're not taking position on that. We just want to be sure that what you do and what you want is clear, and that when it goes to be implemented, that we're not having companies say, oh, I also fall under that, when they may not have been contemplated. There are some issues with the possibility in my third bullet that the applicability of this to a previous year, such as the tax year 2009, would create a situation where we would have to remove the values from the central assessment roll for the last two tax years. That would generate a refund from the counties to those companies, whoever those companies may be. The local counties would then have to determine what property they had in their counties and then appraise them and add those to the tax rolls as omitted property. And if you're familiar with the omitted property statutes, that means, and some of these changes occurred just last session, so I know they're fresh in your mind, that means that they could add the oldest year first, and then that would be due first in November of 2012, not this coming November, 2012. And then they'd add the second year next, which would be 2013 for the 13-14 tax year. So the taxes that have been paid already would be refunded at, with 12% interest, and then they would be rebilled but not due for two future years. So that's just a logistical complication, or if maybe it's not a complication, but that's just how the statutes work for retroactive in this case. And those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I wanted to have you up before I had the proponents up so that they can, as part of their testimony, respond to some of these technical issues if they consider it appropriate. So I think I'll leave it at there unless there are questions from the committee. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And I assume you'll be standing by if you're needed.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay, now I'd like to call Craig Campbell and Gregory Chamoff.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of Yahoo. First, I want to thank John for going through the purpose of the central assessment, because that saves me the time of going through that very same thing. One of the things I wanted to distinguish is what Yahoo is compared to what has traditionally been centrally assessed. Yahoo has a single physical presence within the state of Oregon that is in Hillsboro. It doesn't have any network assets and does not have the capability to communicate its information except by an agreement with those companies and entities that have those networks and infrastructure already in place. We have there's a business center in Hillsboro which does work for Yahoo. And again, it physically is not capable of communicating its message without those agreements. What brings us here today is a change that occurred by rule by the Department of Revenue in 2009. What that rule did is it brought several companies that had heretofore not been part of the central assessment, communication companies, most of which were internet-related communication companies, under the central assessment. When that happened, Yahoo, Facebook, and Google, and similar companies, were assessed a central assessment tax. Now, to give you an idea of what difference that made to a company like Yahoo, previously we were assessed local property taxes in the amount of $75,000 per year. When we became centrally assessed because of the rule change at the Department of Revenue, we were paying $210,000 a year, or an increase of 180% over our previous tax base. Now, you can understand that they were assessing us as a communications company. And we're not here to talk about whether or not telecommunications, internet communication companies should or should not be under central assessment. What this bill does is it's designed to provide the Department of Revenue with clear language that says if you're not a communication company, you're an information service provider, then you're not a communications company and you should not be centrally assessed. That is what our language is designed to do. In addition, after paying the central assessment, because companies pass on their tax responsibility to those people who provide service, essentially we end up getting double tax because we have to enter an agreement and pay fees to access those networks for communication that are being centrally assessed. In addition, this sends a fairly clear signal for companies who Oregon has been taking a great amount of pride in collecting and attracting to the state of Oregon. Now anyone who happens to be an information service provider not only will know that their taxes have been increased, but can't find a rational reason why they are suddenly brought under the central assessment, because from their perspective, they don't provide communication. So why would they be considered a communication company? What I want to do is very quickly take you through what was intended in the language of the bill. Now, if there are better ways to say what we have said, we're certainly interested in pursuing that. The definition of information services is actually federal language. It's not language that we developed. It's the federal language for an information service provider. What we have done, most importantly, is found in Section 2, Sub 5. And what it says is that the department can't assess a company if they're an information service provider who has to, by agreement, arrange for the communication. Once you start providing your own communication, this doesn't apply anymore. Now, if there is a tighter way to give clear direction to the Department of Revenue that these sort of companies shouldn't be included in central assessment, we fully support the idea of making that language as clear as possible. Part of it, we think, is because perhaps the Department of Revenue didn't understand the difference between the type of service a Yahoo or Google or Facebook is versus what a communications company is. The analogy that I've used is that if I happen to be Borders Bookstore and I sell a book to you, the fact that I use UPS to deliver that book to you does not make me a trucking company. And that's essentially what's happened here, and that's the very narrow focus that we're trying to address in the bill. I have with me Mr. Chamoff, who is dealing with the three court cases that are currently being dealt with. This particular issue is being dealt with by a rather small and narrow court case. And the issue comes up, well, do you allow the court to decide or do you have the legislature take action? And really, the reason the court cases are happening is because the language in statute is not sufficiently clear for the Department of Revenue to interpret them. So what we're arguing is, all right, then let's have the legislature, at least in our instance, provide very clear language as to why a company like this was not intended to be centrally assessed. We don't have network assets that are hard to value for a local government. We only have one set of property. It's only in one city. We don't provide communication services. So it doesn't make sense for us to come under what the statutory definition is, but apparently we need more clarity on that. What Senate Bill 751 is specifically designed to do is make that clear. And again, if someone has language that allows us to do that more narrowly or more specifically, we're fully willing to look at it. And in fact, we've asked for that language, and I believe there may be some that may be offered. So with that, I'm willing to answer any questions you may have. But thank you very much for giving the time and having the bill in front of you today.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chamoff, did you want to add any comments on maybe some of the comments the Department of Revenue made about the language of the bill and how it is broad?
Madam Chair, members, yes, thank you. Greg Chamoff from the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine. I'm appearing today here mostly in my role as a trial attorney for companies that are having to deal with this issue in the Oregon Tax Court. Let me give you a little bit of background. Up until 2009, companies like Yahoo were not centrally assessed. They were locally assessed by the counties. Without any change in law, you didn't do anything. The Department of Revenue decided that a whole group of companies that had not previously been taxed as communication companies should be taxed as communication companies and centrally assessed them, and everybody's bill went way up. Those cases are now being litigated. The lead case on behalf of Comcast is scheduled to have final argument next month. There are a whole bunch of other cases stacked up behind that one waiting to be decided to see how the tax court decides that case for Comcast. The reason that this bill is in front of you to get clarification is that not all of the cases are identical to Comcast's. I don't represent Comcast in that lead case. In some ways, I wish I did. They have really good arguments for why they should win. And their arguments are sufficiently good that if they win on some of those really good arguments, the court won't ever get to the issue that Yahoo is raising in this bill, which is that companies that only hire communication companies to carry signals and don't have their own communication network ought not be taxed like a communication company. I realize that I'm somewhat arguing against my own interest. If you don't pass this bill, I'll get a lot more work because I'll end up representing a whole bunch of cases, companies and cases in front of the Oregon Tax Court. Address one of the points that Mr. Phillips made about the concern that counties are going to have to refund taxes. If we win the tax case, that's going to happen anyway. Most of the companies here at issue have paid their bills, and if we win the tax court cases, which are for past tax years, we'll get refunds from the counties on those bills as well. I realize that might be perceived as somewhat of a burden on the counties, but the bottom line is, and I'm sorry if this sounds a bit like a closing argument in a lawsuit, you didn't intend for the Department of Revenue to go around and start taxing these internet information companies as if they were AT&T, that they paid their taxes because the department told them to and are now fighting that interpretation shouldn't be causing them some sort of harm. They're entitled to their money back if they establish that the department misread the law. All this bill does is provide some relief for those companies that may not be able to benefit from what I anticipate will be Comcast's victory in the lead case.
Can I stop you right there? The Comcast case, as I understand it, is pretty broad. And so wouldn't the successful outcome of that case cover the situation that your clients are in?
Madam Chair, conceivably, yes. Comcast has more and different arguments than other companies do. One of their very good arguments is the Department of Revenue went to the Legislative Assembly and said, we can't centrally assess cable companies. May we please have the permission to do that? And you told them no. Now, if Comcast wins on that argument, and I think they should, then the court's never going to reach the issue that Yahoo and the information services companies are bringing to you. If we thought that we were going to win, if it was necessarily going to win this issue in the Comcast case, we probably wouldn't be here. But this is the kind of relief that's appropriate for this body to provide to give clarity to the Department of Revenue to tell them that they are taking an action you didn't ever intend for them to do.
Okay. Thank you. Did you want to comment on the other cases that are pending?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'll save that for the tax court.
Okay. All right. right. Are there questions on this very simple and straightforward issue from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I assume you'll still be here if we need to call you back.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Next witnesses, Mike Dewey. Oh, wait. Before we do this, we have a very, very busy colleague here. So as I said before, we will recess the hearing on Senate Bill 751, and we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 307. Nazem.
Chairperson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 307 is that has to do with transient lodging tax. Just a very quick, what the bill does, the transient lodging tax or the hotel motel tax is a 1% tax by the state. When that happened in the 2003 session of my House Bill 2267, there was a moratorium against the local governments levying the tax, except for very special cases, which those cases are to be 70% targeted towards tourism-related expenditures, in the sense that they are facilities or actual physical assets for the tourism. This bill, what it allows the local governments to do is to get some of these taxes back in their repertoire, if you will, and allow them to expend those monies on tourism-related services. And that's the addition and the relaxation of the restrictions that is put in law for the local governments.
Okay, and we have with us Senator Bates. And Senator Bates, I assume that if you had your choice and the Ashland City Councilor David Chapman were sitting in the audience, that you'd want him to bring him up with you?
Absolutely.
Okay, could we get Mr. Chapman by phone and so they can virtually testify together?
Okay. Probably can do that.
This is a technological task of the
it looks like
Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. Information system or communication system.
This could be centrally assessed.
City Administration, this is Marissa.
Yes, is Councillor Chapman there, please?
No, I'm sorry, he's not.
Not your own.
This is the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee in Salem. Is there a number that he can call in?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's your office. Okay.
Planning.
Hello, this is David Chapman.
Hello, Councilor Chapman. This is Ginny Burdick. I'm chair of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, and we are just starting our testimony on Senate Bill 307. So I thought we would lead off with Senator Bates and give you the opportunity to listen to his comments, and then we'll take your comments.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and fellow committee members. For the record, Alan Bates, a state senator from District 3, which obviously includes Ashland, Medford, Phoenix Talents. This is a bill that you may remember as touching on an area that is very sensitive to this legislature. For those of you here, the time the bill was first passed, it was a tourism tax, and with all the issues involved when the tax was brought up, it was carefully put together on a compromise of how those monies would be spent. I won't go into the history of it, but I remember very clearly what we went through at that time and can still show you the scars of my back from it. So I realize we're touching a very sensitive issue here. This bill does not do a whole lot except allow more local control of some of that money. The 70-30 split is maintained. The 70% that goes to cities is opened up a little bit to be used for a little different area that has not been touched on before, and that area is tourism-related services. That's the phrase used here. I'll give you an example of what that might mean in a community like Ashland, where we have a city of about 25,000, and we have 400,000 tourists a year coming to that city, a really amazing figure between the Shakespearean Festival, the Brit Festival, and the other things we offer in Southern Oregon. We are a major tourist attraction for the Bay Area, for Northern California, and for the Puget Sound area. Most of our people come from those two areas. So we have this huge influx of people for 4, 5, or 6 months of the year, and then the town quiets down for a while, only to go through that same cycle again, which we, by the way, actually like a lot. Okay, I have access to world-class restaurants that wouldn't be there otherwise, and world-class entertainment, Shakespearean Festival and others. But it does put a strain on us. If you've ever been there during those times, you'll understand what that strain looks like. We want to keep our parks clean. We want to keep our streets clean. We want that to be a good experience for the people coming to Ashland and visiting Ashland for these issues. And that also includes people going out to the Brit Festival in Jacksonville and people going into Medford to go to some of the cultural events that are starting to grow there also. This allows a local city, even I suppose a county, but primarily cities, to say we want to use some of this money for services as well as infrastructure to maintain the tourism we're looking for. I believe it also affects other communities in this state. Most likely it's going to affect smaller communities, ones like Bend, that have a large tourist population coming through, and coastal cities where they have the same sudden influx of tourists, which they welcome and want to come into their communities and want to have a little broader ability to decide how we're going to maintain our infrastructure, both physical infrastructure and our ability to keep law and order, keep our areas clean and pristine for people to come and visit these parts of Oregon. So that's all this bill really does. It's not a dramatic change to this. It's a small tweak, which could, for some communities, be very, very important. I hope that sort of illustrates what we're trying to talk about here and what it means at the ground level when this bill is passed, if, in fact, you rule out in a favorable fashion, which we hope you will.
Thank you, Senator Bates. Any questions for Senator Bates? Senator Tilker.
I have a question for Alan. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Bates, also from a tourist town that you're well aware of, you mentioned we want to take care of our parks. Now, is that for the 7 months after the tourists have left and we're now enjoying our towns again? Or is that, I mean, again, we're trying to get a nexus there, a nexus with the tourist that's there, and so that these dollars are to be spent attracting tourists, not just cleaning up when they leave.
It's primarily for the time the tourists are there. I mean, you'd have to, if you ever have a chance to come to Ashland, as an example, I'll use Ashland at two different times, come in July and come in December. You would think you're in two different towns in some ways. In July, Lithia Park is packed. I mean, absolutely packed, and people are having a wonderful time. We are constantly keeping it clean and keeping it functioning properly. People are filling the streets up and down the sidewalks and doing things. And then I should probably say February and December because we have a pretty good Christmas festival there too, which we're pretty proud of. But let's say it's February, you know. I could go hunting in Lithia Park, knock down deer, and probably nobody would care. I mean, that's an exaggeration. We're not allowed to do that. But but I mean, that's the difference, okay? I mean, you can walk through the park in February and just see occasional people wandering through. It's kept clean simply because there's not a lot of trash and a lot of things happening there. And I'm not saying tourists are trashy. Don't get me wrong here. I'm careful. But you get that many people in one place, things happen. You know, the trash cans get filled up faster than you'd normally expect to have to be emptied out. You have to empty them maybe 3 or 4 times a day versus once a week. That kind of stuff starts happening. And it allows, I would allow a city, I would expect to say, we're going to hire some summer help this summer. But we won't need that much during the winter. And you can just sort of roll that through your community and think about what that would look like. We want people to come, again, I'll use Ashland as an example, and have a really great experience. You know, wander through Lithia Park while before the plays start, eat at our restaurants, waiting for the play to start, shop in our little boutique places, which I think are really fantastic to go to, especially the fly shop, but that's a different story too. But all those sort of things are really important to us, and we want to have a little leeway here to maintain our environment in these areas so that people will want to come back. We don't want them to come in and say, you know, I was here last year and it was kind of trashy and they didn't keep the place clean and I'm not sure I want to come back next year. I'll go somewhere else. We want them to come back.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you very much. Councillor Chapman.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is David Chapman, City Councilor for the City of Ashland. Our address is 20 East Main Street, Ashland, 97520. I can fill in a little bit of the, we have some specific targets that we're thinking about for this money that I think will relieve your anxiety a little bit. I'm going to testify in favor of the Bill 307 for the City of Ashland, and in particular we're talking about the tourism-related services. You received a letter from Mayor Stromberg, and I won't read that to you, but here are some of the key highlights. Tourism is a key factor of Ashland's local economy. We provide specific services for our visitors that we would not otherwise provide to our citizens. In Ashland, the number of visitors, as Dr. Bates said, increases greatly during the summer. We want to add some services that will provide these visitors a safe and inviting experience. Prior to the recession, the amount of money that we spent on these services was well over $150,000. Now we're, because of our budgeting, we're down to $130,000, and we've cut some of those services. And then let me touch briefly on the services we provide.
Okay, before you go any further, Mr. Chapman, we've got quite a few people in the room and limited time, so if you could make your comments as short as possible. Thank you.
I'll make it very short. We have a civilian patrol downtown that enforces downtown laws. They spend about a third of their time answering questions and directing visitors and helping them. We have a small police station, a contact station downtown, because we think it's important to have a presence downtown. And we have an officer that specifically is assigned to that station. In addition, other officers swing by to do their work so they can have a presence there. We host a number of special events, as Dr. Bates said, particularly the 4th of July parade, where 35,000 people hit downtown, and we have additional costs there. So, sum it up, it's a very important aspect of our community, and we urge you to support tourist-related services. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Are there questions of Councillor Chapman? Thank you very much for being willing to testify by phone.
You're welcome. I wish I could have been there.
I do, too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right. We will recess. What is this one? Okay. We will recess the public hearing on Senate Bill 307, and we will reconvene the public hearing on Senate Bill 751. And Senator Starr, you wish to testify on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr. I am the senator that represents Western Washington County, and I am here to testify in support of Senate Bill 751. This is an important bill for an important employer that happens to be in my district, and I think you've heard from Yahoo already. They have over 400 jobs in our state. They are faced with a situation where a Department of Revenue rule had a significant impact on their tax liability. And I think you've heard those numbers already, but it is significant, which has caused them to bring this particular bill to this legislature. I believe that the legislation is the appropriate response to a Department of Revenue rule. Clarify for the department what the legislative intent is as it relates to the particular type of business that Yahoo is in. And I would add that there are additional companies that are similarly situated that this state, our state of Oregon, has aggressively recruited to come and open up in our state. And that includes Google, that has a significant presence in the Columbia River Gorge. It also includes Facebook, that has a significant presence in, I believe, Eastern Oregon. I'm not exactly sure which towns that
Prineville.
And our state, I want to say, bent over backwards to recruit these companies to our state and bring those good jobs to the areas that they are in. It is, I think, also important to recognize that these companies are not in the communications business. They're just not. It's separate from what your communications, your telecommunications, your cable companies are in. I recognize that there is a lawsuit out there right now pursuing clarity on some of these issues. I believe that this bill has virtually nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with the lawsuit. And the appropriate thing for this legislature to do is to pass Senate Bill 751, provide the legislative clarity for the Department of Revenue, so that these businesses understand what it is that they, what their tax liabilities will be going forward, and aren't tempted, quite honestly tempted, to pull up their roots that are still fresh in our state and move to other states. So with that, Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to add my 2 cents. I commend you to your work, and I would ask that you look favorably on Senate Bill 751, move it to the full Senate so that we can have a vote on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for appearing, Senator Starr. Are there questions? Thank you. Okay, now we're going to call on the long-suffering, long-waiting Mike Dewey. And, Mike, I think you're signed up with Amy Tyson.
Yes.
Do you want me to get her on the phone while you're here?
Oh, that would be, if you could do that, that would be great.
Okay, usually I save phone people at the end, but since it's in the same handwriting. Okay.
Thank you for calling Ben Broadband. This is Kathy Turner, Amy Tyson's assistant.
Oh, yes. Is Ms. Tyson there, please? Tyson?
Yes, she is. Hold on one moment while I transfer you.
Hi, Ms. Tyson. This is Jenny Burdick. I'm chair of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, and we're having our hearing on Senate Bill 751. And Mike Dewey is signed up and wanted to testify with you. So I think we'll let him go first, and then if we could have your brief comments after he finishes.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mike Dewey, for the record, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. Cable companies employ over 2,700 employees in the state of Oregon. In the last 5 years, have made investments of over $500 million in infrastructure improvements and have paid over, in the past year, $70 million in income taxes, property taxes, and we also pay local franchise fees, which are usually 5% of gross revenues. We're somewhat torn by this bill because the cable companies are in the first lawsuit, the Comcast lawsuit, based on a decision, as you heard, in 2009 by the Department of Revenue to centrally assess cable companies' internet service providers, which would get at Microsoft, for example. They are now centrally assessed, and DirecTV and Dish and those kinds of companies. This is, as you've heard, is a very complicated issue. We first started this in 1989 with a Oregon tax court decision, which was the Jones Internet Cable decision versus the Department of Revenue under the guise of central assessment in Douglas County. Now, we're dealing with a law that actually passed in 1973 that redefined communication to include data transmission by whatever means. And that's the language the Department of Revenue is using today to centrally assess a myriad of companies that heretofore were locally assessed. Now, this may be unfortunate, but I was in the room in 1973 when this bill was being debated. And the transcript will show that this was a housekeeping bill, but nonetheless, 36 years later, we come to now central assessment. One of the interesting conundrums we have here, and you're going to have, is also the rule by which the Department of Revenue used to centrally assess cable companies was found invalid on technical grounds by the Court of Appeals. So in other words, there really is no guidance as to who is going to be centrally assessed in the state of Oregon, because there is no rule other than the statute, which is a 1973 statute, when many of these companies did not exist. So we, Comcast, are in the Oregon Tax Court. The judge has made it very clear that he is going to develop a record that is going to be very good, so that if it goes up on appeal, and I say that because the trial was litigated in late December, and amicus court briefs were filed by Comcast, and amicus briefs, and AOI actually filed an amicus brief on behalf of Comcast. They were filed in February, and it's my understanding that the cities and counties will file amicus briefs on behalf of the Department of Revenue, and those are due. And as you understand, the trial will finish on April 15 with oral arguments. Now, obviously, we think we can win this trial. Now, the problem we have with this bill, and again, we're torn, is that in one sense, we compete with some of these companies. Google TV is a competitor of ours, and Google Voice is, and this is the Wall Street Journal that I'll show you, an agreement with Sprint that would be exempted from this bill. Now, we do think that if the court rules on behalf of Comcast, we do believe that the other lawsuits will go away. And I say that because I just can't imagine the department and the Department of Justice want to go down this road with a whole host of companies, because that's going to be very, very costly. Also, our concern is that, and I don't think it's necessarily implied here, but there may be a message by not carving out the other companies that are centrally assessed, the legislature is in some way implying that it's okay to centrally assess them. If I thought this legislature would centrally assess, exempt all of these companies, we'd have a bill before you today, but we just didn't think that would happen in the midst of a lawsuit. The last thing I want to say is that there's the conversation about enticing companies to come, and I'm for as many jobs, you know, good-paying family jobs in the state of Oregon. But we've got to be careful. It's always, there's an old saying, the best customer is the customer you have today. So let's make sure that if there are competitors in this arena, in this legislation, let's not pick winners and losers until we know what the court says. I think there is then time to look at what the decision, where the decision came down. And at that point in time, you have the opportunity to sit down and say, okay, do we need to fix this statute? Who should be in and who should be out? So I'll finish there and let Ms. Tykeson talk, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Tykeson, if we could have your very brief comments, because we have a number of other people signed up.
Most certainly. Madam Chair Burdick and members of the Senate Finance Committee, for the record, my name is Amy Tykeson. I'm the president of Ben Broadband. Ben Broadband is a family-owned, Oregon-based company serving Central Oregon since 1955. We're located in Bend, Oregon. Our company has about 250 employees, and we've invested about $125 million in infrastructure and improvements in our region since the year 2000. We also pay 5% gross revenues from our cable services to local governments as part of the local franchise. I'm opposed to Senate Bill 751 for several reasons. In 2009, as you've heard from some of the other people that have spoken today, the Oregon Department of Revenue made a decision to centrally assess Oregon cable companies, internet companies, and satellite video companies. Like other Oregon cable companies, moving to central assessment from local assessment caused our property tax bill to increase. As you're aware, under central assessment, intangibles are taxed, which is not the case under local assessment appraisal practices. Ben Broadband does not believe the Department of Revenue has the statutory authority to centrally assess our company. Therefore, we, like other cable companies, internet companies, and satellite companies, are now in Oregon Tax Court challenging the property tax assessment practice. As you've heard from others regarding the Comcast court case that's happening, they're litigating that, waiting for a decision by the Department of Revenue. And from what you just heard from Mr. Campbell at Yahoo, they're asking in Senate bill, in this bill, 751, to be carved out from central assessment, and companies like Google and Facebook would also be exempt. All very large companies who are competing with our company now, and they will be even more so, in my opinion, in the future. So there's three points I would like to briefly make today. First, Senate Bill 751 is premature since the Comcast case in the Oregon Tax Court is still being litigated, and the final oral arguments are scheduled in a few weeks. I believe Comcast will ultimately prevail. Therefore, at this time, the legislature should not start picking central assessment winners and losers through legislative action. These, as you're gathering from these comments, are very complex decisions in a rapidly changing business. Second, carving out companies like Google is unfair. Google offers, as Mike Dewey just said, Google TV and voice services that compete with what Ben Broadband offers in our region and our video and voice offerings. Setting up different tax schemes for competitors is unfair. And let me underscore that the ecosystem that these companies and cable companies are part of is changing very fast. I don't think the Oregon legislature wants to make decisions today that will be obsolete tomorrow. It's worth noting that the companies seeking this exemption do not pay franchise fees and employ a small fraction of the workers in Oregon compared to Oregon cable companies. Third and finally, I understand that this legislature is trying to foster legislation and rules to spur economic development and create jobs, which includes new investments in Oregon. As I've said earlier, we continue to invest in our different services and products, as do other Oregon cable companies. Helping new entrants invest in Oregon to the detriment of Oregon companies may be a zero-sum game or worse if property tax disparity increases our ability to compete with these giant companies, costing local jobs. I hope the Senate committee will delay any decision on Senate Bill 751 and not attempt to pick winners and losers in a complicated and rapidly evolving competitive landscape. Thank you for your time, and I'll attempt to answer any of your questions.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Tykeson or Mr. Dewey? Okay. Thank you
very much.
Thank you for being on the phone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, next witness is John Powell, Barb Young, and Brant Wolf. And again, if you could keep your comments brief, appreciate it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA represents small, independent telecommunications companies that operate throughout the state of Oregon. I'll be very brief. You've heard all of our concerns from other witnesses. That concern is that this bill potentially could unfair advantage or disadvantage one company over the other. That's our concern, and I won't go any further than that.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Get the prize for brevity. Welcome to the committee.
Chairman Burdick, committee members, my name is Barb Young. I'm the legislative director for CenturyLink. CenturyLink, until Friday, April 1st, is a small telecommunications company operating in Oregon. On April 1st, we will complete our transaction with the acquisition of Quest, and I won't be able to say that after that day. I will make my comments very brief also. I think Ms. Tykeson and Mr. Dewey made some very good comments with regard to the state of competition in the telecommunications arena. The lines are blurring daily. And we believe that with the courts looking at this particular issue, it's premature for this bill to be before the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is John C. Powell, representing AT&T. And we would also echo the voices of opposition to Senate Bill 751. However, we have prepared some amendments that we have discussed briefly with the proponents that we think could get a lot of parties where we want to go. If it's the direction of the committee, we would be willing to work with those groups on that issue. And it addresses basically the tax fairness issue that you've heard today. Under current law, there are information service providers, and then there are communications companies, and you're either one or the other, though both industries kind of blur the lines. For instance, AT&T is a communications company, but it has divisions that are information service providers that compete directly with Yahoo and Google. So under this current law, Yahoo and Google would be exempt from the central assessment, but AT&T's portions of their business that do the exact same thing would not. So our amendment would allow the portions of business that are intangible to be locally assessed, while the portions of the business that are communications or tangible would be centrally assessed.
Have you worked with any of the other parties on these amendments, the broadband people, the Comcast people, et cetera? Have you worked with any of them as well?
I just received the amendments last night and just spoke with the proponents briefly before the hearing.
So I would encourage you to talk to others about it and maybe bring it back to me or the committee at some future time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, can I ask John a question?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Has this amendment gone through the accounting department, so to speak? I'm concerned that this could be a nightmare as far as allocating those dollars in and out that have to do with communications versus information systems. And because of the gray areas and the crossover, I'm envisioning a nightmare and trying. We could make a lot of money doing this, but I'm just worried that we're creating a bigger nightmare.
Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer, I do not know the answer to that question. I can get back with my client and confirm whether they think this would add so much administrative cost and burden that it wouldn't be worth it, or whether they think their definition that they have drafted is clear.
Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions from the committee? Senator Hess.
More of a comment. Thank you. I think part of the difficulty here is so much of this language in this section of 308 was written before anybody knew what Google, Yahoo, or even those technologies ever were. And it's sort of like this whole section needs a makeover, not just to separate this issue, but to look at this in its whole and then figure out, you know, the fair way to do this. Otherwise, we'll continually be trying to, you know, what my den looks like when you kind of jerry-rig plugs and tables.
Fire marshal warehouse.
I think that it would be under another committee's jurisdiction. Oh, wait, we're the finance committee. But good point, Senator Hess. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Thank you for being brief. Ginny Lang and Craig Honeyman. I may have gotten Craig's name messed up. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ginny Lang. I represent Qwest Communications. I will just highlight a couple of points. One is the parity issue. As the old-fashioned telephone company and sort of veteran of central assessment wars over the years, and I've got the scars to prove it, this is not a simple issue. And whoever made the comment that telecommunications probably shouldn't even be a centrally assessed taxpayer in today's world, that is so true. If you look around at the competition and the kinds of services that dozens of companies are now offering to customers, we're not in the utility business as most centrally assessed entities these days, energy, railroads, others. But overturning that is a hurdle that is not likely to occur probably in my lifetime. Secondly, the last thing that I think we need is one more definition of information services to have to deal with and parse and litigate over the coming years. We have similar kinds of definitions in federal law, in rules, in FCC orders, at the state level, with the PUC. We just don't need one more definition that we have to figure out who's in, who's out, what does it all mean. And finally, I would say that the idea that AT&T is bringing forward, and I just had a chance to look at it briefly before the meeting, it does seem like it has an enormous amount of potential for confusion and sort of a burden on either the department or the company to try to figure out what portions of their assets are in or out on any given day. The only exemption that I'm aware of that has seemed to work pretty well is a number of years ago, the wireless carriers asked the legislature to okay the idea of exempting the amount that they pay for their federal license. You know, it's a very measurable, understandable portion of their business, but to try to do it in any other way for these companies seems like it would be a real problem. Happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, and I just want the record to show that I've not seen any amendments, so my comments didn't mean anything plus or minus towards something I haven't seen, and I don't think any member of the committee has seen them either.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Honeyman.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Craig Honeyman, Legislative Director, League of Oregon Cities. We represent all 242 cities in the state. I've had distributed to you our comments there. I will be very brief and summarize those as most of the arguments you've already heard. But just to reiterate very briefly, it's the League's position that Senate Bill 751 is ambiguous as to who's in and who's out. So for that reason, we think the bill needs a great deal more work. We believe there's a potential for inequity in terms of, again, who's in and who's out, what companies, rather, are included under definitions and under the idea, the concept of central assessment. An argument you probably have not heard yet, from a city point of view, we're very concerned about the retroactive nature of the bill. Section 3 specifically takes us back to 2009 and puts cities and other local governments at risk for revenues collected or received and probably already spent. So that is of concern. We believe that the legislature has already spoken on the issue of central assessment, and in my comments there is a cite and a quote from language that was developed in the 2009 legislature. And to conclude, again, you've heard about the court case. We believe this legislation is premature and ill-timed. Let's wait for the outcome of the tax court's opinion on the pending litigation, which, by the way, we have filed an amicus brief on, and go from there. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your written testimony, which elaborates on the points that you made. Appreciate it. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I do have one question in looking at the tax code. Why are intangibles taxed centrally and not included in local taxation? And where is the citation found for that? Is it by statute or by rule?
Madam Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, I would have to defer to the department for the exact site, but it's a darn good question.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I would too, except it's my understanding, and I haven't been in these discussions as long as some others, such as Mr. Dewey, have been, but it's my understanding that it has to do with networks that cross geographical boundaries, cover large portions of a geographical boundary, and it, there is value inherent in that that doesn't exist in a sort of a standing location.
Madam Chair, follow up. Is there anyone that can direct us to a definition of intangibles?
We can drag John Phillips, or maybe Mr. Dewey can do it.
Is it found in statute, Madam Chair, or is it found in rule?
Mike Dewey, for the record, very quickly, I don't have the site, but the we'll just do this by diagram. So if you're a communication company, you're centrally assessed, and under the ORS, companies that are centrally assessed, they do assess intangibles, and there is a list of what includes intangibles, and part of that would be goodwill, contracts, patents, workforce, and then there's some discussion about additional capitalization in the unit approach. But it is in the statute.
The statute is being hunted down. John, do you know that off the top of your head?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Morris, I believe that's in Chapter 307, like 020, but I'd have to look to get the exact words. It defines property, and it says that it defines intangible property. Thank you. Yeah, Chris. And then it goes on to say that the tangible property is not subject to taxation except for as relates to the central assessment statute. So it's in Chapter 307.
So what you're answering his question is it is indeed in statute and it's not.
Absolutely. It's not in the rule.
Is a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Please follow up.
Is there some reason why it's included in central assessments and not in local? I know you tried to explain that, Mike, but it wasn't clear.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Morris, the concept of unit valuation has been around for, like I said, early in the last century. With that concept is the idea that in order to value, and let's just use the railroad because that's probably what was around in 1909 when some of these statutes were created. To value, like I said, the rail line through your county might be scrap metal at X dollars per pound, but that doesn't represent the value of the railroad company. So if you just looked at the physical property in each county, in each state, across the United States, you might come to a number. But it wouldn't represent the value of the company, the value that that piece of railroad steel adds to the entire network and the integrated operating unit of the whole system. It doesn't really reflect that. And so the concept was developed, like I said, you know, in the last century that in order to capture that, you value the company as a whole. Now I'm getting to your question, and that is, how do you then subtract out, how do you value the company as a whole, but to look for what would someone pay or what's it worth, what's the stock and debt method to determine their value, and then how do you subtract out things that aren't physically able to be touched or seen, like goodwill and a workforce in progress and various things that contribute to the overall value, but for which you wouldn't have your value if you didn't have it. So our challenge would be to centrally assess a company, subtract out the intangible value, but how do we know what the intangible value is? It's not easy. What other states have done in some cases is said, well, here, apply this percentage. Because there's no real way to get a hold of what's the property worth versus what's the intangible property worth and how do you separate the two. If you asked us to do that, we would probably say we can't do that unless you give us some kind of a formula that's just a flat rate or some way to do that.
If I was paying the tax, Madam Chair, I'd want to know how in the world you arrived at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, intangible value seems to me to be just a very opaque
yes, and Senator issue. Morris, we don't arrive at the intangible value. We arrive at the value of the company. And then we say, okay, what portion of that value is in Oregon? Now, that will be made up of portions that are tangible and intangible, and we don't sort it out because we can't.
And again, Mike Dewey, that is why you have a lot of litigation around this area. And Jenny Lang was correct. This is when there were the natural monopolies that existed. And in the telecom world, there was one telephone company, AT&T. And it didn't make any sense to do it locally. But now you have a myriad of communication companies, and they are no longer monopolies. And once you get goodwill into the equation, in most cases, it will substantially increase your property tax bill. And Yahoo's bill is not as high as others that are in the mix in the Oregon Tax Court in terms of the percentage increase.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, too, the answer to your question is in Chapter 307.030, subsection 2.
Okay, thank you. Senator Telfer.
Follow up on that. John, did I hear you say that you're looking for a methodology to determine that? I know, you know, we spend hours trying to deal with value and goodwill for a company, and it can be what do you want it to say, you know, type thing. But there is a methodology in establishing at least a range that everybody accepts to value that intangible. Did I hear you, in responding to Senator Morris, talk about needing a methodology, a formula?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, members of the committee, unless you change the law that tells us not to value intangible property for centrally assessed companies, we don't need a method.
Do we have anybody
signed up? But I didn't follow up. I didn't get how you came out with the number, is what I'm saying. Is other than saying, here is the value of the company, pull out the tangible. Well, first of all, you got to come up with the value of the company, and you're doing that on some basis, some methodology.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, we do that on a number of different methodologies, including the three valuation methods, market, sales, and income approaches, and I'm not an appraiser, so I probably won't get into that too deeply as to how that's done, but there is a methodology. There's an approved methodology in the appraisal, the authoritative text on appraisal that we follow. And there's also what's called the WSSADA, is the Western States Central Assessment Group, and they provide best practices that we follow also.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Luckily, Senator Hass has volunteered to rewrite the code.
He's doing it right now.
Okay. I have no one else signed up. Is there anybody else who wanted to talk on this? Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 751, and we will reopen the public hearing on Senate. Before I do that, there's a high likelihood that Senate Bill 308 will be put over. So just wanted to make people aware of that. And we will reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 307. Right up here. Okay. Signing up in favor of this bill, we will start out with Michael Novak and Mike Elias.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Novak with the League of Oregon Cities. Out of respect for the committee's time, I'll be exceedingly brief. First off, I want to start off by thanking Dr. Bates for recognizing this issue of importance to local governments. I think he did a tremendous job encapsulating the needs of cities and counties and all local governments. The League is in support of Senate Bill 307. The current preemption on locally levied transient lodging taxes certainly hampers cities' abilities to address the increased demands placed on public safety and other essential services. The League has worked with the legislature during this session to allow local governments more flexible use of these lodging taxes, either by broadening the definition or of tourism-related activities or possibly adjusting the percentage distribution. I'd like to add one point that the Task Force on Comprehensive Revenue Restructuring recommends, quote, reducing restrictions on local government's ability to raise revenue as a method for helping out local governments. I would say that this bill certainly fits that mold. There are a number of other bills dealing with the lodging tax, Senate Bill 541, 542, which also broaden the definitions, and then there's a House Bill 3518, which adjusts the percentage allotment. Look forward to discussing both with the committee and members of the tourism industry means of adjusting these definitions, broadening these definitions, and we certainly appreciate the committee's interest in this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Elias?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Mike Eliason with the Association of Oregon Counties. Again, I will also be fairly brief. I've provided some written testimony, so I won't cover most of that. I will quickly say that AOC has supported, continues to support the 1% statewide lodging tax that began in 2003. All 14 counties that had transient lodging taxes in place before the 2003 law change all dedicated some portion of the revenues generated to tourism and continue to recognize the importance of the tourism industry. As Mr. Novak said, we do support Senate Bill 307. We also support the other bills that are working their way, or at least potentially being discussed, Senate Bill 541 and Senate Bill 542. And we would also say that the law that imposed the statewide transient lodging tax in 2003 did impose a preemption against local governments' use of much of the revenues. And so 70%, as you know now, of new lodging taxes past 2003 is dedicated to tourism. We believe that the law as it existed previously, to some extent, makes a little bit more sense, letting local governments make the decision locally of how that money should be spent. Real quickly, I will just say that as great as tourism is incredibly beneficial to cities and counties, there is an increased demand for county services that comes with increased tourism, including public safety and corrections, health and emergency services. During the high season of tourism, especially on the coast and a few other areas, traffic congestion, road wear and tear are obvious. One example, Lincoln County continues to see usually up to 50% of all DUIs are committed from folks who are not residents of the county, which increases some stress to the county jail, to sheriff's offices, DA's offices. Granted, all of these are not all overnight guests, although I suppose if they spend the night in the county jail, they become an overnight guest. But I will say in closing that there comes a point in time where maybe local government can no longer continue to provide all of the services necessary, and things may break down to the point where an area that was desirable for tourism becomes potentially less desirable due to the lack of services that are provided. Nobody's saying that this is the answer in full. For instance, in Tillamook County's Bill 542, which they...
I won't even
address that, other than to say that this may be one piece of the puzzle. And so we do support 307 and the other bills as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Telfer.
I do have a question. I think both county and cities, having served on a city council where we had a lot of tourism, I had these issues of these dollars and trying to define, you know, the definition of tourist-related. So in the bill, it says tourism-related service, and the definition is pretty loose. Do you think that's sufficient, or are we just opening up cities and counties, particularly cities, from having to deal with what does that mean, you know, and trying to explain to their tourism and lodging people in the community that do we need a stricter definition, or is this fine?
Well, there are some individuals here from the city of Bend, Redmond, and Sisters who could probably address that better than I.
I think we'll do that. Well, why don't we save your question
okay. And
have them do it because they're right on the ground.
I was looking for additional cities' interpretation. I'm pretty sure I know what my city's interpretation is, so okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. My apologies to our next panel because they came from over 100 miles away, and we always like to get people up there in a hurry. Eileen Sterney or something?
Stein.
Sorry. David Brandt and Eric King. Welcome.
I'll start, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Eric King. I'm the city manager for the city of Bend. Bend collects about $3 million annually in transit room tax. Citywide, we collect about $100 million in revenue. Of that, $60 million are restricted revenue, either by ORS or just by virtue of we have a strong belief in the nexus between the fee or service, or I'm sorry, between the fee or the tax and the service being provided. So our general fund, where we have the most discretion, we've got some major challenges as a city, as like most cities do. We have self-imposed a split between money that we dedicate towards tourism promotion and that those dollars that we put into infrastructure development to help support our community, including tourists that come to Bend. So we feel that it's incumbent upon local communities to make that call of how to spend those dollars. And as Senator Telfer alluded to, we've had some struggles about that definition, I guess, to come out and answer that question. We want to be broad, and we want that to be a local decision about what is tourism promotion or tourism services, because for us it's not just about promoting Bend as a brand, and I think we do that fairly effectively. It's also creating an environment where people want to come and they have a pleasant stay, and so having the public safety services, having roads in good condition are all part of that mix. And you know, we require as part of our contract with our Visitors and Convention Bureau that we have an annual marketing business plan that specifies, you know, how we're going to market Bend every year. I'd like to have the flexibility into and really have that be a local decision about how, what kind of resources we dedicate towards marketing versus what resources we dedicate towards services that tourists might benefit from that might not follow that strict definition. So it's really important to us to have that flexibility. So I just ask that we're supportive of this concept, and we would like to see this move forward.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Burdick and members of the committee, you're actually lucky. All of Central Oregon cities are in the Capitol all day long today, so appreciate your consideration, but we are here most of the day and have been, so thank you for your time, and it's good good timing to be able to come over and testify on this bill today. The city, record, Eileen Stein, city manager of Sisters. I apologize about that. Similar to Ashland, Bend, Redmond, all of our communities, all of Central Oregon is a tourist destination for all of Oregon and beyond, certainly Sisters as well. Tourism has been the sort of a pillar of the Sisters economy since the 1970s with the platting of Black Butte Ranch and the creation of Sisters Western theme back at that time. Tourism is just one element of the overall Sisters economic development profile, but it is the foundational element. There's a number of ways that the City of Sisters works with its partner agencies, and particularly the Sisters Area Chamber of Commerce, to support a wide variety of community initiatives. Some examples of just recently, the city and the chamber worked collaboratively in the creation and submittal and recent award of the Three Sisters Scenic Bikeway application. Worked on joint planning for facilities and route alignment on that project. The city last year, in addition to what the city provides to the chamber for general support that comes from transient room taxes, provided an additional $6,000 for the chamber to upgrade its website with a promotional campaign to promote the new Sisters Country brand. And through the city's community grant program, the city budgets $18,000 a year to support various community groups, including the Sisters Quilt Show, the Sisters Folk Festival, various chamber-sponsored special events, various youth sports events such as Little League and other sports tournaments, all which draw tourism activity to Sisters. And similar to the Shakespeare Festival, the quilt show, the Sisters Quilt Show, draws 20,000 visitors on a single day alone, which is substantial for our community of 2,000 people to support on a single day. Now, transient room taxes are the second single revenue source behind property taxes for the City of Sisters, and we bring in about $700,000 a year in property taxes. And so our next largest property tax, transient room tax, is $270,000. And I took a look at our budget, and between our sheriff's contract with Deschutes County and general city administration, that's $685,000. So most of our property taxes simply pay for our sheriff's contract, which is not full-time, and just general city administration. So we rely on other revenue sources to the general fund to support special events and tourism-related activities. So parks, what are those parks and special event support, public works, services that support the special events in town, planning and community development, and just general maintenance of city facilities. And
Could you kind of wrap this up?
I'm sorry, yeah. I will. I guess I want to leave the committee with the point that it is certainly tempting to designate transient room taxes purely for promotional purposes alone, but for our cities and many like ours, the quality of the visitors' experience once they arrive depends on the livability of the community and the quality of experience they have when they're there. And that experience is made in large part by the municipal services provided by the local government. That's what keeps our tourists and our visitors coming back to Sisters and many communities like ours. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, David Brandt, city manager for the city of Redmond. My story is a little bit different from my sister cities. Our TRT revenue is about the size of the city of Sisters, even though we're more than 10 times the size. I actually wish I had some of the problems that they have due to tourism. Redmond would like the flexibility to use some of our TRT revenues to actually generate tourism. An example, just to be brief, we developed a very nice downtown park as a celebration of our centennial last year using urban renewal funds. It's been wildly successful. It brings people down during the summertime. Come November, we shut the fountain off and it's completely dead. We would love to be able to use TRT revenues to help us operate a winter ice rink, again, to bring people down during the winter season. Again, hopefully to bring tourists into the town, help us generate additional TRT revenue from hotel rooms being occupied in the winter. Currently, we don't believe that we have the flexibility to do that. We would like SB 307 to provide that flexibility.
Appreciate that very much. Are there questions? Senator Telfer, did you want to ask your question of them?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I can ask the question. What I'm hearing is you want some flexibility in the definition. And you're willing to put up with the community, particularly the tourist community, coming in and arguing those definitions.
And they will. We know. So
been there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Other questions? Did you have one?
Just an observation in along the same theme as Senator Telfer. The definition, as I would read it, would make this tax, instead of dedicated, 30% available for general purposes, it would make 100% of it available for general purposes. That's the way I would read it.
Well, and this is just for the transient room tax. I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's prospective. It's moving forward. So I don't think it would change any kind of allocation for those transient room tax already in place.
You mean for the money already collected?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm talking about future.
It's future.
For the future money collected.
Future increases.
Yeah. It would be they wouldn't reach back.
Right. No, they won't reach back, Madam Chair, but everything that is collected from this point on is no longer dedicated in the way that is 73.
It would broaden so the definition of what you could spend it on.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right.
It opens it up.
It becomes totally fungible with the way I would read the
bill. That's correct.
Okay. I think it's probably a matter of, I don't think that was the intent of the bill, but it might be the effect.
If I may, in response to Senator Morris, correct me if I'm wrong, but currently it's to be used for tourist promotion.
Correct.
This merely expands it to include promotion and tourist services, meaning things that have a direct connection with a tourist.
That's clean water.
Well,
safe streets.
Thus, you know my question on what's the definition.
Okay, I appreciate you coming. Thanks a lot, and I hope you're enjoying your day in the Capitol.
We are. Thank you.
Thank you.
We certainly enjoy your communities. At least speaking for myself. Okay, last witness is Bill Perry and Bill Cross. And as they come forward, visualize a room full of constituents that they represent that they did not bring today because I advised them that if we are going to get going on this bill, they will have the chance to bring others with them.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, member of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Lodge Association. I'm handing in written testimony, so I'll just try to touch a few of the key points. I would say I agree with Senator Morris's interpretation of the bill. One of the other bills that is not up today does stay in statute. It only deals with future taxes. This one changes the existing definition of existing taxes, so it would change the current ones. And I do think it would be able to apply it to water, roads, police, everything. So from my perspective, it does. General fund services. Just very quickly, I do want to say that I agree that our taxing system here in Oregon is horrible. The local governments, because of ballot measure limitations, are in a tight spot. I think we as an industry are willing to help and try to address that. I would also say this is used as a tourism tax, tax of tourism. And if you look at my testimony down there, it talks about the $8 billion that was spent by tourism. Only 15% of tourist dollars are spent in hotels. 17% is in transportation and fuel, and 20% in restaurants. And so really, if you're trying to tax tourists, I don't think this is the way to do it. It's a small piece. It's once again a targeted tax. And what we're trying to do in a tax system, from my perspective, is make something a little more broad-based so it impacts individual industries in a smaller manner. And I would also say the example that was used in Ashland, obviously the Shakespearean Festival is the draw. They're not taxed, and I'm not saying they should be, but if they're the ones drawing in the tourism, why is it that my specific membership is asked to collect the tax per se, when I would also say they use lodging tax dollars to promote the Shakespearean Festival? So if we're trying to tax tourists, we should be looking at something that's a little bit more broad and others. And I also want to say that the word preemption keeps getting thrown around here. This is not a preemption, and I know we could probably argue over semantics. You can still raise local lodging taxes. You can still use increases in lodging taxes for general fund purposes. A preemption would be like you have on alcohol and cigarettes. A limitation on lodging taxes would be something you used to have on gasoline where it could only be used for roads. Now you've made it into a straight preemption to 2014. But you can use lodging taxes for general fund purposes. We're just asking, if you're going to do it, help us promote tourism that helps all these other industries that are listed here. But I also say, and I'll let Bill Cross address this, the one thing the 2003 legislation has done is it's created one of the best working partnerships we have from local governments, DMOs, destination marketing organizations, the industry, and the state. We've increased our tourism promotion efforts and our collaboration between all those entities to make sure that they are all successful promoting tourism. So it's done some great things for all retail businesses since 2003, and I hate to hamper that by saying you can now take those monies out of the system. So with that, I'll either answer questions or let Bill Cross go.
Okay, why don't you go, Bill, and see if
they have questions. Committee Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross. I'm here representing the Oregon Destination Marketing Organizations. And we are in opposition to the proposal. Just a quick reminder, I guess, when 2267 was passed in 2003, the legislature and the governor looked at the local transient tax as an opportunity to invest in the economy and in job development. And it was a conscious decision when they worked out that arrangement with the 70-30 split in terms of the local transient taxes. And I've attached the most recent report from the Oregon Tourism Commission on what those tax dollars have helped do in the state of Oregon. And when you look at the partnering that goes on between the local destination marketing organizations, which are your VCBs, your chambers of commerce organizations that are promoting their destinations, along with the state tourism commission, we're getting a great return on our dollars in terms of overnight visitors, and that's translated into, for example, in 2010, $2 billion of employment earnings. So it's a very critical part of our local, and in particular some of the rural areas, they're a mainstay for their economies. So we ask that you not move this bill forward, that we continue to take advantage of these marketing opportunities that the transient tax offers us. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
But, Madam Chair, I have to note that Mr. Perry was profusely arguing for a sales tax.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I've testified before a sales tax in front of this committee, and I know some of you have too.
Well, that's
don't
not,
tell your constituents.
That's not nearly as bad. That's not nearly as bad as
a
Tabasco tax.
Comes through the window.
It's true.
All right, thank you. There's no one else signed up. Anybody else wanted to comment on this? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 307. And committee, we are not meeting on Friday, and so we are not going to get to Senate Bill 308 today, and I will discuss with the sponsor what plans to make for this bill. So with that, we are adjourned.